Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. I'm here with my internet girlfriend who has just been a beacon of hope throughout these trying times, Faith Richardson.
Oh, I do try. I do try.
My guiding light, truly. Mainly guiding me towards the ASOS sale.
I mean, I can only do what I can do.
The thing that's driven me crazy this week that's been in the news is that it's come out that Boohoo's been kind of treating their factory workers really... my parents are calling. Let me just decline that. I'll ring them back. It's come out that Boohoo has been kind of mistreating its factory workers in the UK. And I mean, first off, I'm like, okay, people are angry about this because it's happening on home turf, even though they know that it happens globally.
Yeah.
And people seem surprised. And, you know, I'm kind of like, is it that surprising to you when you're buying a whole outfit for, you know, less than a sandwich at Pret's? You know, are you really surprised that the people making it aren't properly compensated? I don't know.
I know. And I think it's that thing as well. Like you say, I think it's like everyone's so outraged because it is on home turf and it's happening in England. But the alternative is that that's also exactly what's happening when they outsource them to places like Bangladesh and China and things like that. Like, that's just the same business model for really all fast fashion companies. It's just the outrage is directed at Boohoo because it's happening here where the minimum wage is like elite, like that's illegally low to be paying somebody, but that's what's happening everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I just think, you know, I know that, so we shop occasionally kind of for new stuff, but our rule tends to be, my rule anyway is I'll buy in the sale or I'll buy in the clearance. Yeah. Because in my mind I'm like, well, that's inventory that's kind of outdated, even though it's not, you know, and that's only going to go to TK Maxx or, you know, whatever. But I think ASOS dropping them as a brand is like, okay. But again, it's kind of like the Bravo curl. It's like, if you're going to start dropping every single brand with ethical malpractice, you're going to be a skeleton, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's that thing as well. Like you say, like I have a sort of general rule where if I see something like new online, my first port of call is that I try and find it elsewhere. So I try and find it on places like eBay and Depop and all that sort of stuff. And it's only when I've kind of really exhausted those things and I think, how much do I really want this? If I do really want it, particularly like you say, if it's in the sale and it's dead stock, that'll probably end up either going to landfill or outsourced elsewhere. Then I'm like, right, if I do really want this, I can't find it secondhand or at least a very similar thing secondhand, then I'll buy it. And I think it's that thing. It's so difficult because, you know, sustainable fashion can be really, really expensive to buy new. Yeah. And it sort of puts people off when you're not having an extended kind of budget for this kind of thing. I think for plus size people, it's really, really hard as well. And I think it's that awful thing of like, you kind of just end up feeling guilty no matter what you do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's such thing as like a perfectly ethical consumer. You know, I think you kind of have to decide what your priorities are and kind of focus on that. So, for example, like I still go to Wilko's to buy a lot of my toiletries, you know, because I just get like the cheap own brand stuff. You know, that's not organic. That's plastic packaging. But then at the same time, you know, I buy probably 80-90%. Probably nearer to 90% of my clothes I buy secondhand.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like what you lose in some areas you make up for in others. The way I buy my groceries is like low waste because I just go and get like a crate from the market and then I literally like carry it home in my tote bag. So yeah, you just kind of have to figure out what works for you and start making those small changes, I think. That's just something that was kind of online. And then, oh God, I logged on to Twitter this morning and like, do you know how the bad news just keeps coming?
Oh yes.
Did you see?
No, I haven't been on Twitter yet today.
Oh God. Well, do you remember Naya Rivera from Glee?
Oh yes.
So she's presumed dead, missing off a boat.
Oh,
4-year-old son was found in the boat alone.
That is horrendous.
Literally the most awful thing. And I regret logging onto Twitter every single time. Part of me is like, do I delete this damn thing? Because I just feel like the odd piece of joy that it brings me is never counteracted by just the sheer wave of sadness.
I know. I mean, I use it very sporadically. I'm not on it that often. And it's the same sort of thing where it's like, I'll go on it and I come back off it just feeling like, oh my God, like I feel like I've just had some kind of traumatic ordeal. It's like draining, but I kind of can't get rid of it. It's almost like, you know, when you're like a car crash where you can't stop looking at things.
Yeah, it's that morbid fascination in a way. That's why I'm so into like QAnon, like documentaries and podcasts, because I'm just like, I can't look away. It's so awful, but like I have to see where this goes.
No, I'm the same. Like I love a good murder, crime, really doom and gloom and dark kind of thing, which I think is why I loved Hannibal so much, because it was so just like beautifully shot and artsy and shit, but there was such a good quality of like death and murder in it, and I'm like, it's fine, I'll just don't need to question my life choices too much.
Okay, I do need to get onto that if you say it's good.
It is, it's really good, and it's made me fancy Hannibal Lecter, which is a sentence I never thought I would say, but it's happened and here we are. So
the ultimate bad boy.
I literally keep having dreams about them. It's reached that stage.
Have you ever been like romantically entangled with a criminal?
No, never. I mean, I've had like low-key boyfriends that sort of were drug dealing on the side without knowledge and things like that, but never like an out and out like criminal.
Because I have to say, at a couple of different points during lockdown, I was like, do I get a prison pen pal?
Lou, no.
Well, but just to talk to. Imagine sexting on paper. And then what? Ellipsis.
In a written word would be like, plus you'd have to wait like a substantial amount of time between each one.
No, well, it would give you enough time to think of like an appropriately cringe response. I don't know. I wonder if you could get a green card if you married like an ex-con.
I don't know. I wonder what the protocol is with that, because I guess technically they are still a citizen. At least it removes you from all obligation of actually having to be like essentially married.
but they don't have voting rights, do they, in America?
No, they do here.
They do here, right?
I think so.
I'm sure they do.
I don't know, but I think they do. Because there seems so much outrage about that being an American thing, so I'd be surprised if it was also in England, but...
Things to think about.
I know. So much to Google after each of these episodes.
I feel like I'm either going to end up with, like, a full-on mobster or just the most clean-cut, like, straight-laced person ever. There's going to be no in-between.
Yeah, you're either going to end up with a kind of, like... what do you call it? Like Teresa and Joe situation.
Oh no. Or you
have like some kind of like blue collar criminal who's in prison for like dodging his taxes.
Oh, it would definitely be spreadsheet related fraud. I don't know if I sent you this meme, but I found this or someone sent me this meme yesterday that was so funny. And I just had to send it around all of my friends that work in finance because it was just too on point. It says the economy is just astrology for straight men. They get super moody because the NASDAQ is in retrograde. Which I just really enjoyed.
That's incredible. Very into that.
Anyway, we are coming to you sort of a week late with the episode that we were meant to release last week because we had our tech issues doing a three-way recording. Not the first time a three-way has gone
awry.
It's always just the logistics of it, you know, it just gets difficult. too many cables. So we are going to recap Real Housewives of Potomac Season 1, Episode 6. It would be really good if we could blitz through these before Potomac airs the new season, but we'll see. We maybe might skip a season. I don't know. We'll see how we go with it, I think.
Yeah, I know. Kind of. Obviously, I want to be able to appreciate where the story's gotten me for the new like series and things like that. But if you feel like there's a season that we can probably just skip over, and you can give me like the Cliff Notes version, and that's fine.
Okay, yeah, we'll have a think about that. So we open up with Giselle on her way to meet Katie, and she literally just asks the waiter out on her way into the restaurant.
This is such a flex, like the door had not even shut behind her.
Well, she just knows how good looking she is, and I don't blame her.
I mean, to be fair, if I look like her, I would absolutely be that full of myself.
I'd not get anything done. I'd constantly waylaid, just asking people out for drinks.
I know. I mean, she is so beautiful. It's untrue.
And Katie seems to think that Herman's kind of aura has maybe softened her a little bit. So she wants to swoop in, take advantage of her good mood. And then Ashley and Robin end up joining as well.
Oh, gosh. I forgot about that when she'd asked her on the boat. And I think she did catch Giselle in a kind of a softer moment of weakness and really took advantage of that.
Which does not necessarily last.
I mean, it goes south real quick.
So Giselle is kind of explaining to Katie that Michael took his trousers off and tried to go overboard. And Katie's just like, well, he is Australian, which, to be fair, is the thing that we say all the time as Brits. We're just constantly like, well, look, he's Aussie. Like, don't put this on me. Like, we're very different. Like, God, don't associate us with that, please.
I do wish they would stop showing this montage of him undoing his trousers, though. Like, I feel like once was too many times, and they just keep repeating it, and I hope that's it for the season.
Do you really think that those were his swimming trunks?
Not at all. Not even a little bit. There is not a doubt in my mind that he just came fully equipped in his boxers.
I mean, I don't know what's weirder, the thought of getting drunk and thinking I'm going to do this, or like premeditating.
Yeah, I mean,
dressing appropriately.
I mean, nobody goes, oh, you know, nice classy evening boat party, better pack some swim shorts under my like trousers.
So Ashley invites the ladies to the beach, and Katie is roping the women in to promote her big event, which is in literally 2 weeks, and she says that she wants to raise 6 figures. Now, go on.
I mean, it's just, it's a perfect example of the true level of, like, delusion we came to expect from these women, isn't it? Enough, it'll happen.
This is a thing, okay? In my mind, Katie is like a big picture girl. Do you know what I mean? She's an ideas person. She's not getting tangled up in details, practicalities, reality, anything like that. She's just like, yeah, this is where I'm aiming for. So, you know, more power to her. But there is a kind of a rule, well, it's a kind of an unspoken rule with crowdfunding. And I assume it's probably the same with this kind of charity fundraising, which is unless you have like 60 to 80% of your goal already secured in advance, don't even bother mounting the campaign, or in this case, don't do the event.
Oh, that's interesting. I presume it's just to stop people from just being like, yeah, we're going to make this much money and then backing off with all the money, essentially.
Yeah, not even really that. I think it's just more that if you kind of get that initial traction that looks good, so you launch your campaign, right, and you've already pre-agreed with these people and said, oh, you're going to pay this money in, you know, on this date, mm-hmm. and those numbers start to accumulate, then it looks good, and then it gets other people to buy into it and to donate themselves or to invest themselves, right? Whereas if you do this big kind of ad campaign and then it fails to kind of get that initial push, people are going to be like, oh, it must be floundering for a reason, and then they get put off.
Oh, that's interesting. I never even thought of that sort of aspect of it, but I guess that does make complete sense. But that also just means that she's even more wildly off base and think she's going to raise this kind of money.
Well, this is the thing. So again, that's like crowdfunding for a company. I don't know how it works with fundraising, but it doesn't strike me as stupid to kind of have those conversations about donations prior to the event and then use the event as almost just like a top up.
Yeah, because I mean, I can't imagine that the whole event is full of people who are primed and in position for that exact night to just be able to write a check for like 4 or 5 figures.
Oh, I don't know.
Well,
I mean, this is not our world, obviously. Yeah.
I need like pre-warning if I'm going to spend like £30 on a dinner.
Yeah. Oh, God. The worst is when I went out for drinks. Well, I went for lunch, actually, in London a few months ago with a friend of mine from school. And she made this big song and dance about the fact that she was going to order the most expensive things, get a posh bottle of wine. And I was kind of like, I don't know what you're trying to prove to me, right? Like,
yeah,
childhood friends, like, I don't know, but it was a bit odd. And then at the end, she was like, don't worry, honey, I'll get it. And I just made a point of being like, no, we'll go halves. Just because, like, this was my pride. I was just like, yeah. Okay, just because I'm like up north, like,
yes, doesn't mean poverty life.
And then I just like winced as I paid like £60 towards this dinner bill. I was like, no. More expensive than my train ticket.
That's outrageous.
But there's nothing worse than people who are like, so Splitsville, and it's like, oh, I got like a starter and a tap water for this exact reason.
I hate that, because like literally, so obviously at the last before the past 6 months, last year before that, obviously I was like out of work, just finished uni, didn't have any money, didn't have anything. And every time we did go and do something, in my head I'd be like, if we did it with like a big group of people, I would be like, I'm only gonna get my own drinks, and like we'd go for food and I'd be like, right, I'm just gonna get like the smallest thing that I can and stuff. And then I hate when people are like, let's do rounds. I'm like, I don't know what you don't understand about the fact I can't afford to buy a full round of drinks for people.
I'm not into rounds. Because also I don't want like my drinking to be guided by the group.
Yeah, no, I'm
like,
exactly.
I want to be able to switch to tap water whenever I want. I don't want to feel like I have to wait to get like a drink back. Like, nah, just let me do my own thing.
Yeah, I am the same. I loathe the concept of rounds, because you always just end up feeling like you've either been cheated or like you've somehow like scammed the other person out of a round of drinks. There is no fair way to finish it.
Yeah, rounds
just, you always just end up so much drunker than you want to be as well, because I'm like, oh, I just want to nurse this one, maybe give it an hour before the next one, and suddenly there's a drink in front of me. I'm like, well, I'm obviously gonna drink it because I have no willpower. And then it's just disaster.
Yeah, rounds with straight men as well, that is not good.
And because I always drink spirits and they always drink pints and stuff, and I'm like, I can't go like drink for drink with this split of alcohol.
So Giselle and Robin are putting up a lot of resistance to this idea, and you can kind of see that Katie just like maxes out of her social tolerance meter and she just goes straight away to the other extreme and just kind of starts acting like a pissy five-year-old, and it's like, well, you're off the committee then.
I mean, you could almost just see the blinds go down behind her eyes, couldn't you? And it was like, this is it, I've had enough. Like, if you're not gonna live in my fantasy, then you've got no place at this table.
Katie's kind of exasperated eye roll face.
Yes.
Truly relatable.
It's a masterpiece.
So we then go to Ashley in the bachelor pad, and it looks like they hired the nice assistant, which is called Jasmine.
Yes, I'm glad they went for her. Although, so I took real issue with the fact that she had her stylist right there in the room and she was wearing that like Ed Hardy-esque dazzled t-shirt and nobody was saying anything. Although I have to say, even that stylist's outfit was questionable.
And it's and the stylist is literally just sitting on the side taking shots and not appearing to contribute to picking out what's going in the suitcase.
Yeah, because presumably this whole setup was meant to be that he was meant to be styling outfits for her to take to Bethany, and you know, the assistant was presumably just on folding duty. But essentially what seemed to happen was that the assistant was just packing her bags for her while the stylist got wasted, and Ashley didn't even look at her.
So then we go to Katie and Andrew, and Andrew is like lounging on the bed in like an aggressively loose fitting shirt.
He does seem to love a white linen shirt, doesn't he? Just sort of like just too far unbuttoned, but only just.
Faith, I love his frown.
Oh god.
And you can tell that he's just telling her what she wants to hear as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he seems like the kind of man that is just well equipped at going, this is the ABC of how to stop this from becoming a thing.
Yeah, because again, you can sort of, you get glimpses into Katie's quite erratic behavior, but I don't even think it's drug induced. I just think that's just what she's like.
Yeah, I'm the same. I mean, I know obviously Karen and Giselle had that conversation about whether they thought she was on drugs or not, and I genuinely don't think it is. I think she either can't handle alcohol very well, or I think she is literally just a woman that's living that close to the edge at all times.
Yeah, she's a bit like ditzy or a bit flighty.
Yeah.
Okay, I hate this word, but this is probably the best word for it. Scatty.
Yes. He is the queen of scatty.
Hate that word so much, but I think that is the most accurate descriptor.
It is, and it always sort of reminds me of it sort of paints a visual picture of a cat that's kind of, you know, when they get that wild-eyed look and they get slightly sort of fluffed up and bushy, and it's noise, and they're like, what was that, who's over there?
Yeah, and it's always at 2 a.m. and then they start absolutely pegging it from one end of the corridor to the other.
Oh god, no, that is Katie to a T.
Also, it just keeps throwing me that they keep going, that they're going to a place called Bethany.
I know. I'm not a big fan of a place with a person name. But I know it keeps throwing me off. And I'm just like, oh, we're going to Bethany. And I keep going, wait, who's Bethany? Which one's Bethany? Oh, wait, no, none of them are Bethany. Bethany's a place.
And then we go over to the Hugers, and I have to say that it was very stressful to see Ray descending that spiral staircase just laden with suitcases. I'm worried about him. I'm worried, how's he doing right now? I'm worried about COVID getting him.
No, I mean, he seems like such a frail little national treasure that he just needs to be protected. And the idea of him descending that, very tight spiral staircase with those bags, which you know were full of about 4 weeks worth of clothes, it was stressful to watch.
Faith, as the seasons unfold, you're gonna find out about Ray, and there's murmurings behind the scenes, and I'm watching this with the attitude of a virgin, and so I'm open-hearted to Ray at the moment.
Yeah, that's disappointing, because I love him. I feel like he's such a solid stand-up guy and a good husband and things, so it makes me sad to think that he's maybe not as clean-cut and lovable.
Yeah, well, I don't think anything has ever been fully proven or disproven, mm-hmm. shall we say. But for now, we love Ray, and we hope he's okay. And Karen, do not make him carry those suitcases, especially with his loose-fitting tapered trousers. It takes is one misstep to just have a staircase reenactment.
Oh, God. And I mean, I refuse to believe that the entire household doesn't have at least one staff member that could have helped him.
And so Karen starts saying that she doesn't sleep with women, as in the same room as women.
Oh, God.
Then she says something about Katie being bi, and there's just something very irritating to me about this attitude, and you tend to get it a lot with straight men as well, that they think that any gay or bisexual person is going to hit on them.
Yes, and I just find this such a wild thing. It's we don't go through life where every single person of the sex that we're attracted to, so for example, for me, I don't look at every man in the world and go, hey, I want to fuck you. That's not how it works. It's not how attraction works. It's not how sexuality works. So I find it wild that straight men seem to think that every gay man wants them. It's like, honey, we don't even want you.
And we're your key audience.
Yeah. We're your target market. And even we're saying no, thank you.
To the bargain bin you go. Well, this is the thing, and it's even if Katie is bi, Karen, honey, you're a very attractive older woman, but, unless she's into some kind of gilfy vibe, I don't think that realistically she'd be knocking on your door, kind of.
I don't think Karen is Katie's type at all. I can imagine an Ashley, definitely not a Karen.
I can imagine, weirdly, Katie and Robin.
Yeah, I sort of can as well. I don't know if it's that kind of slightly masculine energy that they both exude.
Yeah, yeah. They've got a bit of an athletic lilt.
Yeah, they kind of, I can so see that happening.
Katie is, Karen, sorry, is co-hosting with Ashley. And Ashley is obviously the new introduction to the group. So this trip is her next step in her Hugo finishing school education, clearly.
I wonder how much of this was Ashley invited Karen and Karen took over without any sort of...
Karen fully just proclaimed herself co-host, let's face it.
I also love that she managed to get Ashley to drive her to the house and then complained about everything from the fact that Ashley brought her dog to the fact that she picked her up in a convertible.
That's just a power move.
It's like, oh, you've got a dog? Oh, but there's only two seats. Where will the dog go?
I know, just take the bloody lift. I mean, yeah. In England, aren't you just so grateful if someone offers to drive?
It's truly the greatest thing in the world. And Karen was going on, like, she expected Ashley to be like, oh, I'll just throw the dog over my shoulder. Never mind. We don't need that.
And then Karen is like, I didn't marry into my social status. Me and Ray built ourselves up together. Which, I don't know when they met each other in life, but I don't know, seems kind of... Doesn't seem right to me as a timeline that they...
And I mean, up to this point still, we have no indication that Karen has any kind of career or has had at some point some kind of career. Like, there's been no mention of the fact that she maybe, I don't know, started this company and then sold it for millions and now she just lives a life of leisure. Like, from what I've gathered thus far, she literally just met Ray, married him, and therefore...
moved out of the farm. And then Ashley says that she'd like to be friends with Raven, and Karen is having none of that. She's like, no, that will not be happening.
It's such a weird issue to take where she's like, you will not be friendly with my daughter. Raven's not allowed to hang around with other adults because they'll form her opinions or shape her as an adult. And it's like, you should be encouraging your daughter to spend time around, you know, nice, decent, successful grown-ups. No? Is that just me?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as a 15, 16-year-old, you could be quite impressionable. Ashley drinks a lot. She's married to some, like, old guy. I don't know, like, I don't think Karen needed to be that kind of upfront about it. No. I guess I could see why you'd be reluctant to let that friendship blossom.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose because Ashley's very similar in age to her, so it's less of an adult and more of a kind of weird older sister vibe that they might have, so I can understand that.
Yeah, or like a lax babysitter kind of vibe. Yeah. That would just be like, I'll just turn a blind eye, do what you want.
You do whatever you want, as long as I'm getting paid at the end of the day.
So in the other car, we get to the other ladies and they're playing Fuck, Marry, Kill, and they'd all fuck Bill Clinton, which is so relatable. I'm so glad that he's not just a sex symbol in my own brain.
I mean, I don't get the Bill Clinton thing, but I was very on board with the 50 Cent thing, which none of them seem to be.
Yeah, I don't understand why you wouldn't go for 50 Cent. And then they're like, yeah, he looks like he'd lick your armpits. And I'm like, yeah, that's the point.
That's just
that. Great, isn't it? Come on.
I was absolutely just blown away that they had such an issue with the fact that 50 Cent looked like he'd be a bit of like a dirtbag.
What do you think he's been singing about this whole time?
What did you think Candy Shop was about?
Did you think he was going to take you to like one of those little retro, like recreated eateries to get you an ice cream float? Now I'm just picturing 50 Cent in like a little frilly 1950s apron and nothing else.
What a lovely, lovely Thursday visual.
So then we all end up at the house and we get the classic Housewives recurring motif of assigning rooms. And we also get another glimpse into Katie's star-studded roster of ex-boyfriends, including Pharrell.
I know. I mean, listen, Katie is a stunning, stunning young lady, but she just seems like she wouldn't be their type. Like, she seems so demure and... I don't want to say plain, but like she doesn't have that kind of like zhuzh that you would have assumed some of these men would have gone for. But maybe she's like, when she's not, you know, in a relationship and she's not on camera, she's a totally different kind of a person.
I don't know. She seems to me to be actually very smart.
Yeah.
A lot of that just comes from the fact that she's like an outspoken Democrat, to be honest. Dropped my pen. Yeah, she does seem to me to be quite smart and quite astute. And I think, like you say, it surprises me because I know it's a cliche, but you assume that these like really powerful men just want these very like submissive kind of bimbo-y women that are just gonna hang off their arm. Whereas Katie doesn't strike me as that. And she strikes me as quite kind of headstrong and forceful. So yeah, I kind of, that makes me like Pharrell even more.
Yeah, me too. Although I have to say her sort of headstrong forcefulness seemed to have gone out the window when Russell Simmons demoted her to guest bedroom status and then brought another girl over.
Yeah, that's insane. Like, just move out. Although, having said that, if I was stuck in like a multi-millionaire's house,
yeah, I'd probably be reluctant to leave as well.
Like when I was going out with that older man, you know, his house was pretty gorgeous, and like, I guess I wouldn't leave in a heartbeat.
Yeah. But the thing that gets me is that Katie comes from money, and not just like a bit of money. Like, she comes from this like insane legacy family. Like, girl, you don't need to live there. You can go anywhere. You have the money. Buy your own mansion.
That's true. Although she moved in with Andrew so quickly.
Yeah, maybe she has kind of a secret codependent streak.
Hmm. Interesting. But when she told that story about the Russell Simmons thing, I honestly never related to her more heavily than when she was just saying that she was like inert in the guest bedroom listening to the recording of some obscure lecture. I was like, that's how I spend most of my time. And I don't even have the privilege of being in a billionaire's penthouse when I do so. So who am I to judge? I mean,
so true. So true. I didn't understand, though. Like, she was telling this story as like, well, obviously, like, Giselle was reading the blog post out. But she told this story on the blog with such like a sense of humor. And yet when they were reading out in the car, she got so defensive and like pissed off about it.
Yeah, she has a bit of a roadside meltdown. But I think Giselle kind of tried to pass it off as banter, but Giselle was being bitchy.
I know. Giselle always has that undertone of like, everything's just a little bit of a slide dig just to see how far she can push you.
It's truly impossible for Giselle to make an 100% sincere statement.
Oh, no. I literally feel like everything she says is just so insincere. It's insane.
We have this saying in Belgium, which is schmet, which is just like a Flemish slang word. And it's like, if something is just like slightly off or slightly rude or slightly like awkward or inconvenient, you're just like, oh, mate, like, that's so schmet. Like, and I just feel like everything Giselle says, you're just there like, schmet.
I love that. I love that there's a word for that.
It's really good. And you can apply it to like a whole variety of things. And I just feel like Giselle is just being like really schmet with Casey, but yeah, it's exactly. Underhand, you know, it's not like outright,
which I'm quite surprised about, because I would have thought Giselle was always the person that was super upfront. But I think as it's going on, I'm kind of getting much more of a sense that she's a much more like, she prefers a sly like covert dig where she can't be called out like straight to their face about it.
Yeah, like she talks a big game, but actually she's quite passive aggressive.
Yeah, and she just makes it see, and she does that thing where she's like, oh, well, I didn't mean it like that, it's not my fault you took it like that. It's like, that's such a cop out.
Yeah. I just love it though, all of these like just the constant cycle of apologies.
I know, it's like there's a permanent apology tour happening in Potomac.
Yeah, I mean, across the Real Housewives in general, and I don't know about you, I can think of maybe like two separate occasions I've had to apologize to someone this year.
Yeah,
so you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't happen that frequently.
Like, and same for me. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's very, very rare that I've ever done something where it's like, I have to give like a real sincere, like, I fucked up and I'm so sorry kind of apology. Do you know what I mean? Because I have this incredible thing called a filter where things come out of my mouth only after my brain has checked that they're probably not offensive.
That's great. How do I get one of those? How much?
Amazon, you know.
So the ladies rock up kind of early evening time, and initially they're very complimentary about the house.
Yeah, they seem sort of quite taken with it, and I'm quite surprised, because I must admit, when we first saw it, for me it was just another prime example of beautiful space, hideous decor.
Yeah, I mean from the outside it looked okay, but they did a shot out the window and there was this house that was like a dark gray, and I just thought that looked so much nicer. Yeah, I don't know why, it just seemed classier than like that. I think theirs was like pale blue and white.
Yeah, I thought the same, and like the interior was all that kind of like lime green and yellow like plaid, and everything was wicker, and it just seemed like somebody who was like, oh, this is beach themed, let's do it beach themed, but without any sense of actual style or substance.
You just know that on one of the walls there's like a kind of threadbare net with some starfish. Yeah. It's like hot glue gunned onto them,
and a sad like watercolor of a boat on the sunset or something.
Oh no, I so rarely see a watercolor that I can abide.
Same. It's just, it doesn't do it for me at all.
Anything, and also like I actually have this in my own apartment, but like there's no way I'm gonna change it because I can't be asked. I have like that awful like magnolia yellow walls. They're not white, they're not cream, they've got like a yellowish yeah. undertone. It's just I see that in a lot of like beachfront properties as like standard.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know if they think it makes it look warmer or what, but it's, I hate a magnolia, loathe it.
Yeah, it's no, so outdated. So the chef that Ashley hired is like the most mumsy looking person on the planet. She's got this like horrible like stubby fringe, bless her.
God, the guy, the male chef kind of reminds me of like Basil Fawlty.
Oh my god, I wrote that exact thing down. I said they've drafted in a British chef who looks and sounds like Basil Fawlty.
It was just such a vibe that I got for
it. Like, here's the asparagus. And it's just like, oh my god, stop contributing to this like stereotype of British people.
I mean, and like, oh god, that food looked like something that would also be in Fawlty Towers. It was abysmal.
I mean, this food to me looked good, but I just can't tell if I'm just like, wow, someone else is making it. Like, great, this is all I wanted.
I just don't understand. Like, it was so, considering I'm assuming that they paid a fortune for this chef, I can't imagine Ashley being like budget on it. But like, it just looked like it was poorly presented, and like, I just don't even know what it was. Like, there was some kind of weird pesto-y looking quality to it.
Okay. Yeah. No, you've put me off now. And then Ashley reminds us that she's a stepmom, which I had actually completely forgotten about as well. I wonder whether she has a relationship with them.
I know. I can't really figure it out, but they seem like they're almost her age because she's like 27. And I'm sure she said the oldest one was 21, so there's only like a 6-year gap, which is crazy.
It's kind of weird.
Like, I can't imagine being like, oh yeah, my step-parent is literally, would have been like 3 years above me.
Well, I would have been, yeah, I could have possibly at one point been like stepmother to a 16, 18-year-old. Which would have been truly insane. I mean, when I say that, I guess the divorce would have had to be finalized. But
probably quite a key part of it.
But yeah, I can't even imagine like what. And that, to be honest, that was also part of the reason why I cut it off, because I was just like, look, not only do we both know that this like cannot be a thing for like a variety of reasons, but also like I think the son was like going to uni and so, and he's like the same age as my nephew, and I was just like, I don't know, it's just weird, isn't it?
No, I can see that.
I mean, can you imagine being the kid in that position? I would not.
Yeah, I mean, you would never warm to them ever.
No, and as much as my wardrobe, I think, would really lend itself to like a bitchy stepmother like kind of vibe, you know, that's not a valid enough reason.
It's not. It's probably not. We should base it on.
I will continue to dress like an evil stepmother, though. Give me all the Dalmatian print.
I just keep dreaming of having one of those, you know, that like the robes that I've got, like the marabou trim. You can just like swoosh around in them.
Okay, Faith, I might be able to get you one made.
Oh my god!
I'll keep you in the loop. I'll keep you in the loop. Yeah, I'm working on some things. I got some things in the pipeline.
Oh my god! No, it is. I've literally been dreaming of just having a really phenomenal like house coat robe.
Yeah, like something you can sit on the balcony and talk to your husband, who is now just an urn.
Yes. That's exactly the vibe I've been going for.
Oh, Barnaby, you always were such lame dinner party conversation. Nothing's changed.
It always was me having to carry the conversation. Exactly my vibe, Lou.
I see it for you. I, like I say, I've got some things in the pipeline. So Robin and Giselle are put in the children's room with the twin beds, but they do have an ensuite, you know, so swings and roundabouts.
I mean, I thought Robin took it all with really good humor. It was just Giselle that seemed to, I mean, it really seemed to push her over the edge.
I don't know, like, is it normal to be this rude to someone who's putting you up for the weekend? I mean, even if you are rich, even if you have high standards, like, do these women expect all of their friends to have a 7 double bedroom mansion in addition to their primary residence? It's crazy to me.
Exactly. And I just find it so bizarre and baffling that you could be this, like, straight up rude to somebody's face. Do you know what I mean? Like, I could not fathom if somebody had literally invited me to their house and I discovered that I was just sleeping on the sofa, I'd be like, bit pissed off, probably won't come back, but I'd be like, thank you so much anyway. Like, you know, you'd just be grateful.
Yeah, I just, this was really, like, annoying to me. Yeah. Charisse and Brene get put into, like, a neon green cave.
I feel like even they took it better than Giselle did, though. Like, I was expecting Charisse to be, like, fully flipped out. And I know she was on board with trying to find a hotel, but she was at least a little bit more gracious about it than Giselle was.
Yeah, she was trying to be subtle. She was trying.
She was. I felt like the effort was there. She might not have executed it very well, but the effort was there.
I mean, literally, okay, so the one time that I refused to sleep somewhere was when I went to Dublin last year to see Lana Del Rey. My ex bought me tickets, and obviously then we broke up, and I was like, do you mind if I still go? And he was like, no, of course, like, sent me the tickets. He was like, you should go.
Oh,
yeah, because he's such a nice person. And, oh, and he's possibly got a new love interest now as well, so I'm really happy for him.
That's very nice. I like that.
I know. It's good. So I'm waiting to get the kind of updates on that. But I know that they've been hanging out and I'm like, oh, it's good. I think as we come out of lockdown, like, it's nice that people are kind of finding ways to date again. So that's really good. But anyway, so I booked a hostel because I, like you, I wasn't as kind of stable as I was last year, financially, emotionally. You know, just in general. So I booked a hostel and I was like, I'll keep this like a cheap weekend because Dublin's pretty expensive as well for like eating out and stuff. But I know it like fairly well because I went through this phase of like whenever I would have just like a meltdown, I'd go to Dublin.
It's a bizarre choice.
Sorry?
What a bizarre choice though, out of why Dublin?
Well, do you know, I think I'm like obsessed with Irish boys.
Fair enough. Totally.
By the way, I'm not saying this is the right way to deal with having a breakdown, but like I had like this one Irish ex called Paddy, of course, and I went to see him once. Then there was this other guy I was seeing called Shane. And then anyway, so I always go to Dublin, I get like a cheap flight and I just like hide out for like 3 or 4 days.
Incredible.
So anyway, I booked my flights and I booked a hostel and I got in late. My flight was like 10 p.m. So I got into town at like 11, went straight to the hostel and went upstairs and it was like 18 people to a room.
Oh, that's already too many.
Yeah. And then because I had said that I was doing a late check-in, I thought I'd be with other people who were arriving late. But no, I was in this room of people who were like fast asleep. It was pitch black. So I was like navigating with my phone torch and trying to find my bed. And people were like tossing and being like, and like groaning and moaning in their sleep. And then there's like a cage and you have to open the cage to put your bag in it. And I was like, holy shit, I can't do this. And I was like, right, I'm going to go to the common room and there'll be people, there'll be like backpackers or whatever drinking. Like maybe I'll like meet some nice people and maybe I can just like drink myself into feeling like this is okay. So I went down to the basement and I was already like fending off a panic attack. And then there were just these two like Russian guys in tracksuits, just like really maudlin looking sitting there. And I just came downstairs and they just like stared at me.
No.
And I was just like, oh my God, no. And there was like no one else around, no staff or anything. So I literally just got up, like I had all my bags with me. I just walked out. I walked across town to like the only guest house with an empty room on booking.com. And I was just like, I need this room. I don't care. Because this is the thing as well. So it said they had an empty room on booking.com. And then I tried to book it on my phone. And then it was like room reserved. But I was like, fuck it, no. And I literally just went in person and I was like, I'm sorry, I need that room. And they actually found me a room in the end, just like a little, like, almost like a little student dorm. Let me tell you, it was like 350 euros. It was honestly, it was like, you know, 6 Lana Del Rey tickets. Saved my entire weekend. The relief I felt was just unparalleled. And from then on, I was like, okay, like, I tried to do the hostel thing. I can't do it. Like, it's fine.
No,
that's the one time that I've just been like, no, not doing that.
I've always been really put off by the idea of hostels as well. Like, it's just something about the whole, like, the sharing space and the, like, people just being around you that you don't know. Like, I'm not good around people in general. I get like severe social anxiety in like groups of strangers, like as is. The notion of them not being able to like escape anywhere to just go like sit in my room and chill is too much.
No, this is a thing. And it is really annoying. Obviously, I go away quite a bit sort of by myself. Mm-hmm. And like you do end up paying through the nose because if you want to have like a solo room, like your own space, and you can't like split the cost with someone, it's annoying. Single person tax.
Yeah,
be happy you're getting married.
I know. Oh my god, but you know it is though as well. It's one of those funny things where it's like I always wish I'd traveled more alone. Like I've never.
No, but you still can.
Oh no, definitely. I mean, it's one of those things. Like I've always said, like I'll probably just be like, I just need to go away for a week and just do my own thing for a week, like just somewhere European and chilled and like not too stressful. But it's definitely something I wish I'd done a little bit more, like when I was younger as well. And, you know, when you have that sort of slightly like risk-free take on life when you're younger.
Yeah.
And I feel like as you get older, you get a bit more like, oh, everybody might just murder me.
Well, to be fair, like now you might just like get killed on the flight going over contracting a respiratory disease. So if anything, our stress levels has risen with like the general risk associated with global travel. So I wouldn't worry. We're not being super irrational.
That's true. I mean, so very true.
And so back at the house in Bethany, Karen and Robin are actually talking some sense as the ladies are Googling hotels. Like it is really rude. I also think that the ladies weren't adequately loosened up with wine over dinner, or I don't think this would have been as much of an issue. Like, Ashley should have just kept filling them up to the point where they didn't care about the rooms. They were just going to pass out.
Yeah, I think that was her first misstep of the weekend, was just to not make sure that these were sufficiently drowning in champagne. I mean, they had like maybe that one cocktail and you could see all their faces where they were just like, oh, is this it?
Yeah, I mean, lubrication is important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then Ashley says that there's no aircon in the room.
And she just drops it in like, oh, by the way, guys.
Like, okay, there's a genuine reason to be like, oh, then I don't think I can sleep here. And then if you'd have framed it like that, then, you know, it would be a more valid reason to.
Yeah, you would have seemed less insane and psychotic.
Well, this is a thing. At this point, Charisse literally like raises her hand and she's like, I just want to let you know in advance that I can be slightly psychotic. I'm in a weird place at the moment and I apologize in advance.
No, I was like, oh, girl, disclaimer, really?
But again, a self-awareness that is seldom seen.
Absolutely. And she just kind of expunged herself from any responsibility from there on out. She has like given herself permission to just act however she wants to act now because she's already put that in place.
So the next day we go to the beach. They've drafted in these like hunky instructors. I guess they're meant to be hunky and I just couldn't get into them. I think sometimes I have like a mental block when it comes to finding Americans sexy sometimes. Does that make sense? Because I think I'm just like my corniness meter just goes through the roof and I can't.
Yeah. I'm fully with you. I think it's because Americans have this like this notion of what is handsome. And it's always this kind of like clean cut, like, could be a farm boy, but could also be like working on the railroads, you know, all that kind of like southerny charm thing that they seem to think comes from just like exclusively like blonde permatanned with like big white teeth. And it doesn't,
and like bulging muscles as well.
Yeah, and it just like basically an Abercrombie model, and it just does nothing for me.
Yeah, just give me a dad bod. Give me a pasty dad bod any day.
Give me some scruff, like all of that.
So, I mean, in this scene, would you be in the surf or would you be on the beach?
In theory, I would love to try surfing, but I'm afraid of deep water and I can't swim, so I feel like it's probably not the sport for me.
Yeah, probably not.
I'd probably be like wading up to my waist next to them, like, "Whoa, you can do this, guys," with a cocktail.
Yeah. I believe in you.
I'll be like a pageant model.
Holding a Cosmo above your head.
Which would you be? Would you be in the surf or on the sand?
I get very restless just sitting on the beach and sunbathing. Like there's a picture of me that my friends will never let me forget where I'm like sunburnt within an inch of my life in this like wide brim hat trying to read the Independent on the beach, on like a windswept beach, and the wind kept like smacking it back in my face, and I was beyond finding it funny, I was genuinely pissed, and they just like captioned it like old man Lou, because I was just like just grumbling about it. But I'm also like not a big adventure sports person. I can go for like water sports, but I like to be on something motorized, so I'll be on a jet ski. I'm happy with that. But I'm not sure a surfboard, but I have good balance, so I don't know, maybe I could give it a go.
See, I quite enjoy like an adventure sport. Like I love skiing, and like I'm always down for stuff that's kind of like a little bit dangerous, a little bit adventurous. But I mean, my fear of water really cuts a lot of those activities in half.
Slight issue.
But yeah, I can do like a jet ski and that sort of thing, as long as I've got like a life jacket, I'm fine.
I mean, the true thing to be phobic of in this scene is Giselle's hot pink cowboy hat. I think we can all agree. It looks like a prop from a hen do.
I mean, it's hideous, isn't it? And you know, the worst thing is that probably cost a fortune. It's probably some hideous designer. And it's just monstrous. It does look like all she's missing is like a penis whistle and a sash.
I feel like Giselle would be such like a dampener on a bachelorette party.
She'd be the person who's just like, well, this isn't very classy.
The ladies go to source some crabs, and Brené and Charisse basically get drafted in for the host committee. They're sort of like the substitutes, the stand-ins.
I love that Ashley at this point has literally done basically nothing in terms of hosting. Like, she sent them out to buy their own crabs. She hired in a chef for the first dinner. And she's literally just stood watching Robin grill.
Yeah, and then when they actually bring the crabs back, they literally just chuck them down on the tablecloth and eat them directly, which I'm sure is the way that you're meant to do it. But to me, it just looks stressful. And I was thinking of you, because you don't even like to eat chicken from the bone. And I was like, ugh, wonder how Faith would deal with this.
This is truly my idea of a nightmare. I just think like, oh, all the butter and the grease, and then all the cracking, and then there'll just be bits of shell everywhere, and then your hands are all slippery, and you can't just pick up your drink because then there's just like crab grease on the drink.
You're not on for a sort of authentic eating experience.
Not so much, no. I mean, I could maybe stretch to trying it, but I can't imagine it being something that I'd be like excitedly looking forwards to. Do you know what I mean? And I'm excited for the experience of it, but a one-time thing.
Yeah, I get that, a bucket list. I also just love that the ladies are just kind of talking around the table, and Karen just states that she does not flatulate. Good for you, girl.
No, I mean, I can't really remember the context of this conversation, but from what I can remember, I think it just came out of nowhere.
I don't know. I can't remember if it was because Giselle was telling like a very relatable story about a diarrhea incident, which was meant to be her like exposing her emotional vulnerability.
Yes, and they did like their circle time thing, their sister's circle or whatever it was called. And that was Giselle's emotional contribution.
I mean, Faith, is this not where our true vulnerability lies? I mean, I have made myself physically ill before, maintaining the facade of not going to the toilet for the first few months of dating someone.
No, I literally have as well. Like the first, I think it was 3 months after Greg and I started dating, we went to Edinburgh for like a sort of long weekend. It was like 4 or 5 days. And obviously we had a hotel room with like the bathroom, like as part of the hotel room. I literally could not go to the toilet for that full 5 days because I couldn't do it in a restaurant because that's too public. And I couldn't do it in the hotel room for fear of being heard. And I just somehow got stage fright and just never even needed it. And then I got back and was so ill. It was like...
Honestly, I tend to have the opposite issue. I remember my ex took me to Porto for our fourth date. And obviously we flew there. And I somehow managed to get a stomach bug like the day that we left. So we were on this tiny like turboprop plane as well. And I was in the loo for basically the entire flight, to the point where you're like, you can't style this out. Like everyone knows what's happening. And there's like 30 people in the entire plane. And then we had this beautiful Airbnb, right? It was gorgeous. But the bathroom, it was kind of done like industrial boho style. Mm-hmm. The bathroom was just like concrete. Okay. Oh. It was like poured concrete. But obviously it just meant that like the acoustics of it were just, well, stunning. And it was just awful. And I remember we'd have to venture out for like an hour at a time before I just have to like run back to the flat. It was And I basically just like pooped myself through the weekend.
Oh God, that's the worst.
It was so bad. It was so bad. But then also he was so nice about it and like so sweet. And I was like, oh, okay, this is like a good guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, if nothing else, it's a very good way of weeding out. It's not worth your time.
But then I was also just like annoyed because I was like, fuck's sake, like this is such a nice weekend. Like I was honestly, I remember going to this beautiful restaurant. There were like chorizo and calamari and like all of these amazing Portuguese foods. And I just remember like sweating my way through trying to eat some of it and just being completely unable to enjoy it. So
upset.
I'd take stage fright any day. Oh my God. And have you heard they're doing the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp hearings?
Yes, I have. And he literally like testified that she'd like to use the correct defecated in their bed. I mean, who does that? Why?
So I just got a text from Hinge Boy saying, I've thought about it a lot. And I think that if Amber Heard chat in my bed, I would get over it. Oh, which, like, fair.
I mean, some people, that's just not a boundary.
Do you think she did it? Do you think she's the abuser?
I think so. I don't know. I mean, it's that thing. Like, I always liked Johnny Depp when I was younger. But then when all that stuff came out originally, I was kind of just like, well, you know, kind of not surprising in one sense, you know what I mean, because obviously quite into the drink and the drugs and things like that. But from the stuff that I've been reading about it, like, I kind of do think it was maybe her, but I just don't know. I find it so hard to tell in these kind of situations.
It'll be interesting to see like what comes out of it. I think they're both like deeply fucked up people in their own way, and I think probably as a pairing, like, that didn't help.
Yeah, I think that's probably a really good sort of way of looking at it. And I think it is that thing where they probably did equal amounts of fucked up stuff to each other. But I think it's because he probably wouldn't have done anything about it in terms of like the law and things like that, because he's probably aware that he's just as guilty as she is. Mm. But she made it a thing where she put it all on him. So now he's retaliated in that sense. But it's just so hard to tell.
I think it's all just going to be very nasty.
Yeah, I do as well. I think it's going to get super grim. Mm. I mean, as if shitting in the bed was, and that's just the jumping off point.
Amber Heard is really scatty.
Yeah.
Ugh, that's why I hate that word so much.
Yeah, yeah. I can see it.
So as we move through the sister circle, Cherise starts talking about how, like, the material aspect of her life that Eddie enables just doesn't matter anymore. And that was, again, like, really sweet, really sad.
I know. I feel like I'm sort of warming much more to Cherise. I know you kind of alluded to the fact that it doesn't really last very long. But at the moment, I am sort of warming to her. And I think now that she's explained about her marriage, it's kind of made me understand her and her weird eccentricities, shall we say, a little bit more.
But yeah, because I also think, like, because Eddie's obviously away most of the time, her kids are away.
Yeah.
Like, just as someone who lives alone, I get how when you're just around yourself for long periods of time, like, you can get very, like, particular about things.
Yeah.
And I think kind of emerging this side of lockdown, like, there are definitely some things that I'm, like, used to, or, like, I have my own way of doing things, and I hope I'm not as pretentious an ass as Cherise, but, like, you know, left for years and years, I can see how that breeds a very kind of
kind of way of living.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally understand that as well. And I mean, it was that thing, even when I moved in with Greg, like, I hadn't lived alone that much. I'd lived alone for maybe a year when I lived in Bristol. And then I'd moved back with my parents, so I'd moved back home and that sort of thing. But even then, just obviously only child syndrome, and my parents have always been very sort of like free and flexible with like what I do and that sort of thing. So I was even then very sort of particular about how I like things, and I still am. And it's still something where I'm kind of like, Greg will do something. I'm like, it's not how I'd do it though. I just have to try and let go of that and kind of just be like, oh, it doesn't necessarily mean that my way is the right way of doing things. I mean, it is, but
yeah. And I think that manifests with Cherise in this, like, kind of like Karen, she's got this like etiquette and this is how things are done, and champagne and society and extravagance. And I think that's just like one specific way in which that manifests.
Yeah. It's almost like a coping mechanism.
Yeah. And then Karen opens up about her mother's early dementia, and that's also really tough to hear. That, again, really humanized her.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it is those little touches with Karen that kind of stop her just coming across as like this really one-dimensional, pretentious kind of a person. Do you know what I mean? It's like she allows those kind of, even if they are very small, she allows those vulnerabilities that kind of make me think, appreciate her as a human being.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then Robin tells us about her financial woes. So we learn that basically she has a friend that kind of scammed her and Juan as a couple out of money.
The drama from this, like, I'm hoping we get it unpacked a little bit more, because I feel like I need to know more about this.
I think we do, if I remember rightly, like, over the next few episodes, you learn a bit more about it. Although I seem to remember they don't go into as much detail as I'd have wanted them to with it, but maybe I'm misremembering.
Yeah, or maybe it's a legal thing where they're not allowed to give too much away.
Oh, that's probably true, actually. I hadn't thought of that.
Like, if they're kind of embroiled in this legal battle of, you know, trying to get it all fixed and whatnot. Mm. But I mean, I just feel so bad for them. And I hope, like, obviously, I know we both said, like, we love them as a couple. And I wonder how much of that actually contributed to them getting divorced and, like, separating and things like that.
I mean, I certainly think, like, financial stress is going to manifest in many different ways. And I think it's one of the, like, biggest burdens that you can have in a relationship.
100%. I think it puts so much, like, untoward, like, pressure on you as a couple. And I think money's always one of those funny things where it's, like, it's never easy to talk about, but you have to try and be open and honest about it and that sort of thing. But it's always something that I think makes people uncomfortable, no matter how close you are.
Yeah, I think it's important to be on the same page in terms of money and have, like, kind of similar spending attitudes.
Yeah.
So I think it doesn't really work if you have one person who's, like, a real saver and very cautious and the other one that's, like, blow it out.
Yeah.
Like, I think you kind of have to be aligned, even if you're keeping your finances separate, right? Because if I'm quite cautious, I'm a saver, you know, not a splurger. And if I was with someone that was constantly just, like, recklessly buying things, like, even if it wasn't my money, it would bother me. Like, maybe that's not okay of me.
No, because I think it does. It makes you kind of think, well, what happens if we ever do combine our finances? Like, are you just going to spend all the money that I've been saving all this time? Like, and I think that's like a really real issue. Like, I'm like, me and Greg are very similar in that we're careful with money, whereas I'm a bit more frivolous in terms of buying like clothes and things like that. But I never go crazy with it. You know what I mean? I've always got this thing in my head of like, I never want my bank balance to get below X amount. And if it starts to creep towards it, that's fine. I don't buy anything. And it's that kind of thing. Whereas Greg's a little bit more careful. And he's really, really good at saving, but he doesn't mind spending occasionally as well. So I think we're fair in that sense. And I think we can both trust that each other would never go crazy with like our finances and like financial support and stuff like that. But I know people whose relationships are so, like you say, like polar opposites of spending. And like one person can spend literally their entire paycheck and the other person's like saving every penny that they've got so they can like put towards a future. And it's like, how much of that can continue when you do buy a house or get married or X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, and I think as well, because it kind of says something about your personality too. And there's nothing wrong with being a splurger, being a bit more kind of spontaneous. But then if you are with someone that's a bit more measured and calculated, like, you know, doesn't that kind of speak to you both as types of people just being very intrinsically different as well? And like you say, if you then want to escalate the relationship, like, how is that going to work in practice? I don't get it.
I know. And I always think that too. And I think it is such an interesting dynamic, like financially and stuff. And I think it's interesting that a lot of your personality and like the power in your relationship, things like that, does come from money, whether it should or shouldn't. It does. Do you know what I mean? I think it's sort of, it does tell you a lot about a person. You're right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've discussed a couple of times like what I earn with men, and it's always been quite interesting, the response. I mean, I've mainly gone out with people that earn more than me, but I've also gone out with quite a few people that earn less than me. And it's never not a part of the conversation, or it's, you know, it's never not something that they allude to.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's funny. It's really weird. Like, I've always been sort of fairly financially secure. Like, even when I didn't have a job and stuff like that, like, I either had savings or I was really lucky that my parents were kind of subsidizing me while I was either at uni or while I was like between jobs and that sort of thing. But I never would expect that financial help from like a partner. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, if we, like, obviously, like, me and Greg, like, getting married and things like that, like, it is a bit more like, I'll bail you out, you bail me out. But especially when you're just kind of in that first bit of a relationship where you haven't combined finances, I find it weird when they depend on you to help them.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the situation, because like, this was a thing in my last relationship where we were in like a really, really small flat. Like, we didn't even have a dining table that we could use. We were eating on the floor. But my ex was in like stable employment, had been for like, you know, 6-7 years, had a lot of money. And I was kind of like, because at one point I couldn't cope with being in such a small space. And I was like, look, I really think we should try and like upgrade the flat to a bigger flat, or maybe like a 2-bedroom, still renting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not in a position necessarily to be paying that. So I said, well, why don't we do 60-40 or 70-30 or something like that? So I would still always try and meet halfway. I mean, in the end, it didn't happen. And in the end, it wouldn't have actually solved the fundamental problems that we had. But in that instance, I was kind of like, okay, like, you need to give me a bit of leeway here, because we are in very different situations. So I wouldn't ever expect someone to like take care of me. And I think now that I'm like solo, like, even more so, I'm like, nah, you know, I will do this for myself. But at the time, I remember kind of thinking like, well, you know, if you kind of want this to work, like, there does have to be some level of compromise.
Yeah, no, I think that's so true.
Anywho's. So we've got, Beverly Hills is back. Obviously, we did Roni the other day. Beverly Hills is looking good this season. I mean, I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't watched this new episode yet, but I've obviously been watching this series, and it's definitely much better than the last one. I mean, the last one I'd all but given up hope. I was kind of iffy about watching the new series, but I'm glad I have, because I'm actually really enjoying it.
Yeah, I find the Denise thing really odd. Her husband is so strange.
He's such an off the wall, bizarre human being. Like,
I don't like him at all.
I don't either. And like, I'm very much team Denise in the whole friction that's been happening. Like, I think it's just another case of them blowing something out of proportion. But his behavior and his response, and like when he was like, oh, I'm gonna crush your fucking hand, and like all these kind of things, I'm like, dude, no, like that's not how you behave.
Yeah, that was really gross. And I think that's like a little glimpse of something we got, that, you know, there's no smoke without fire.
Yeah, 100%.
So you can follow Faith on Instagram at Faith_Elizabeth, 2 H's in Faith. Lots of gorgeous fashion related content on that. And you can check out her website at faithrichardson.co.uk. You can follow me on Twitter at Louisa G. Rogers. You can see my website, louisarogers.net. I need to change. Why did I pick .net? That's so like boomer of me. Isn't it? That's like having like a Yahoo email. What was I thinking?
Ugh. It can be your project for the rest of lockdown.
Yeah, I know. That's like just another thing on the to-do list.
Yeah.
You can also follow Bravo and the Brits on Instagram at Bravo and the Brits. Oh, so I finally got my Botox appointment rescheduled.
Oh, have you? Thank God.
I cannot wait. My jaw is killing me.
I can't believe you've gone this long without having it done. Like, I don't know how you've got like any jawbone left.